following story takes place between the years 814 and 1060. After the great successes of his father Charlemagne, Louis the Pious witnessed a progressive decline of the Carolingian Empire that resulted in many civil wars and brutal fragmentation. The boy was not up to par, but his father left him a pretty shitty system. He was not prepared for the new barbarian invasions, for the constant separatism of the local lords, or for 100% cohesion of the entire amalgam of peoples that he had under his empire. To make everything a little more manageable, he drafted the Ordinatio Imperii, a law to establish a system that would prevent the division of this Imperium Romanum. The empire would be led by the Supreme Emperor King, Louis the Pious, and several of the regions would be governed by his heirs with titles of minor kings or biroys. His firstborn son, Lothair I, was king of Italy and co-emperor with Pepin, king of Aquitaine, and Louis the German, king of Bavaria. But things were going to get complicated. Louis married Judith, an ambitious noblewoman from the Germanic family of the Belfs or Huelfs. Remember that name, it will be important. With her, in 823 he had Charles II the Bald, the future emperor. As we will see, Louis and Judith wanted the new offspring to also have a share of the territory, and that caused the rest of the children to rise up in arms. Over the course of three bloody civil wars, the brothers began to fight against their father and then among themselves, and that was what caused their protest to fail. Louis Viso was a very Catholic guy and decided not to kill any of them. He left them in their positions, but now the supreme heir would be Charles the Bald, and that's it. His good relationship with Benedict of Anion stands out, one of his loyal advisors and the man responsible for reform so that all monasteries would adhere to the rule of Saint Benedict, created by Benedict of Nursia long before. Can you imagine? Obedience, chastity, silence, work in the garden, prayer, like that every day. Of course, this crap wasn't the order of the day. The Cluny order would also emerge from these Benedictines, founded in 910 thanks to the donation of a villa in Burgundy by Duke William I of Aquitaine so that the Pope could found a monastery there. But returning to history, in the year 838 his son Pepin died, and 2 years later it was the turn of Father Louis the Pious, who left the empire on the brink of a new civil war between his remaining sons. But what a surprise!
After Louis' death, his son Charles II the Bald began to reign absolutely. But things weren't going to be easy at all. Lothair I, his half-brother, was an ambitious son of a who wanted supreme control over everything, and began a confrontation with his brothers Charles the Bald and Louis the German, who swore the oath of Strasbourg or Argentaria in 842 to get along for a while against Lothair. This is the first written testimony of the Romance language in France, as it was written in Proto-Fanglish and in Tudesco or Frankish. Lothair was first defeated in a bloody battle at Fonenpuisai and had no choice but to yield and make a pact with his brothers. Do you want to play a little game?
And this is where the famous Treaty of Verdun took place in 843. By which the enormous Frankish Empire was divided into three. The West Frankish Empire went to Charles II. Louis the Germanic Empire kept the East Frankish Empire, the lands east of the Rhine, basically Germania. And finally, the first fool took Lotharingia, the Ringen in German or Lorraine for Spanish speakers, a huge and long strip of territory that went from Frisia to northern Italy. You say, what the hell is this? That territory didn't seem to last long. During a period known as the Confraternitas, the three brothers had relative peace among themselves, mostly to deal with common threats like the Muslims and the Norman Vikings. A term that means men from the north. And the thing is, these guys had already sacked the cities of Rouen before and even went so far as to besiege Paris in 845. Charles the Bald had to pay them 7,000 pounds of silver and gold to get them to leave. If you've seen the Viking series, you'll remember that siege supposedly led by Ragnar Lodbrok, which was brutal, but yes, they took a lot of liberties. Floating towers were neither common nor useful, at least in this particular siege. And then there's the fact that Paris looks like something out of a fantasy world. Gondolin appears when it would have looked more like this back then. And also in the series, it seems like it's just an island in the middle of the Seine, when the city was much bigger, and then the human smashing roller, totally crazy. And the copycat Byzantine chain, more of the same. The use of crossbows at that time is possible. Of course, in the following centuries they would be banned because they were a danger to the human species. And finally, it seems that in the series they've mixed up two different sieges and kings. We'll see more about that later. Another threat was the Britons. Ludovico had conquered them some time ago and appointed a Breton named Nominoe as governor. He would rebel twice against the French, and his son Erisboy would succeed in proclaiming the short-lived Kingdom of Brittany in 851. After the Battle of Jingland or Bartle, although it seems that it was more of a gift from the French king. That's
crap. Lothario died in 855 and was divided among his three sons, which caused a brutal division in Lotharingia. Louis II received northern Italy and the title of emperor. Lothair II obtained northern Lotharingia and Charles the territories of Burgundy and Provence. But this Charles did not last a single assault, and they conquered him in the blink of an eye. Lothair II died in 869 without legitimate heirs, while Louis the German was in Pocilo. Charles the Bald seized the moment and headed for Metz to take control of Orangia, and when Louis recovered, he demanded his share of the cake, and everything was divided between the two brothers in the Treaty of Mersin in 870. In 866, Louis the German died and his three sons divided the kingdom. For Louis III, the younger, Saxony, Franconia and Thuringia. For Carloman, Bavaria, and for Charles the Fat, the area of Swabia. In the end, it would be the latter who would manage to unify not only the Eastern Francia, but practically the entire damned empire of Charlemagne after the death of the Bald Man. Oh yeah, but only for a short time, that's true.
Holy crap.
And the thing is that Charles the Bald was already tired of life, and in his last year before dying, he decided to promulgate in the year 867 the Capitulary of Kiri that regulated the government in his absence. Because of this, the positions of counts and other vassals who died while he was not in the palace passed to the children of the deceased, although provisionally, since when the king returned he had to confirm a new count. They say that this was the official birth of feudalism in Western Europe, although the custom of inheriting patrimony had been around for a long time. In the year 885, the Vikings besieged Paris again, and Charles the Fat was left looking like a useless person. The great defender of the city was the Count of Paris, Odo or Ude, who gained so much popularity thanks to the repulsion of the Viking attack that he was proclaimed the new king of West Frankish. This count belonged to the Robertine family, very powerful in the area, and one of its branches would be the Capetians, so called because they were protectors of a sacred relic, the cloak of Saint Martin of Tours. This character appeared in Vikings, which is why I said that they had mixed things from two different sieges. In 893, Charles Thero, the Simple, was crowned king, although he was not able to rule until Ude died, 5 years later. This king brought some peace to so many Viking assaults. A group of them, led by Rollo or Rolf, continued to do their thing, and Charles the Simple decided to leave them some lands in the Rouen area in 911 that became known as the Duchy of Normandy. That year, Rollo proved his loyalty to the Frankish king by being baptized and, according to some not-so-reliable chronicles, marrying his eldest daughter Gisela de Fran. Another thing that gets mixed up in the
crazy, horrifying, and deplorable series.
On the other hand, in the East Frankish kingdom, Arnulf of Carinthia died, and his son Louis IV the Younger, the last Carolingian to rule there, took over. His death caused the noble families of the area, spread over several large territories, Chonia, Franconia, Bavaria, Swabia, Thuringia, and Lorraine, to fight for control of everything. However, they all had to band together in the face of the threat of invaders from the east, first the Hungarians and then the Slavs. The nobles elected a king to rule them all, and the chosen one was the Duke of Franconia, Conrad Iero. However, the guy failed miserably in repelling the invaders. That is why another king was chosen, Henry I.O., the birdcatcher of the House of Shona or Othonian dynasty. His son and successor, Rodin I.O., managed to stop the Hungarians and crown himself emperor in 962, becoming the founder of the Holy Roman Empire, which I will explain in the coming months. The important thing here is to know that during the next century these emperors would dominate the papal states and could put and remove popes at will, and that this monarchy would be elective.
As your local deputy is radically unpunished in Guanajuato, I will create the conditions so that things will go badly for the honest and the corrupt as well.
Let's return to West Francia. In 922, there was an uprising of the nobles, and they crowned Ude, brother Robert I.O., but he died and they put his son-in-law Raoul I.O. of Burgundy in his place. Charles the Simple had to flee to the Champagne region to seek help from Count Gerbert II of Bermondui, but the latter locked him up in a castle in Somme until his death. But that's a crime, isn't it? That's
not a crime.
After Raoul's death, Louis IV of Overseas arrived, so-called because his mother was British, and when the Robertines arrived they had to leave. With Louis I, the Carolingians were reinstated in power, but the one who really ruled was Hugh the Great, the powerful Count of Paris, a Robertine who had the king under tight control from his position as Dux Francorum as his second in command. But Louis I got fed up with this Hugh and went out with Hugh the Black, William of Normandy, the Archbishop of Reims, and other nobles. Hugh, for his part, found an alliance with the ambitious Count Gerbert of Bermondui. The Frankish king was captured in 945 by the Normans and handed over to Hugh the Great. However, the complaints of the King of Germany, Otto Iero, and the King of England led to his release. They threatened to excommunicate Hugh, and in the end everyone made peace. And we will remain super good friends for the rest of our lives, I'm sure. Louis of Overseas fell from his horse in 954 and was left a doll. His 13-year-old son, Lothair, inherited the kingdom. His mother, the widow Herberga, yes, that was her name, called Hugh the Great to be his tutor, and he accepted and didn't put up many objections. Lothair grew up, Hugh died, and the latter's son, Hugh Capet, would be the new Dux Francorum. The Archbishop of Alverin of Reims was the most powerful in the empire, and he wanted Francia to join the Holy Roman Empire. Lothair was not very keen on losing his royal rights, so Dalverin began to make good friends with Hugh Capet, and since he had some Carolingian ancestors, he could accede to the Frankish throne without too many difficulties. In the last years of his reign, Lothair had his son Louis Volgazin crowned as the new king, who would become the last of the Carolingians. It is clear from his nickname that the guy was not very bright, let's say, and he broke his neck when he fell off his horse, just like his grandfather. These are his traditions that we are going to tell you about. A few days later, due to the lack of valid heirs, the nobles crowned Hugh Capet in 987. This is where the Capetian dynasty began. To speak of Capetians means to speak of extreme feudalization, since it was during this period that this system took shape. During these years, principalities emerged that were equally or more important than the royal domains. For example, we have the counties of Anjou, the Duchy of Burgundy, and the Duchy of Normandy, led by the Normans who supported the Capetians. The counties of Blois and Flanders preferred the Carolingians, while the duchies of Brittany, Aquitaine, and those below ignored the issue, since the royal domains were limited to a few areas within the Duchy of Bermondui and the king's power did not extend very far. Of course, the king controlled large cities such as Paris and Orleans, which is why the area is called the Ile de France. Almost all the counts and their delegates, the lords, resided in castral mounds, which are like wooden castles. However, from this period onwards, there was a boom in the construction of stone castles, typical of the Middle Ages. From these constructions, the nobles exercised their hereditary power in many cases and hired mounted soldiers, the feudal knights, who would become part of the lower nobility. Hugh's early years were not easy, since many Carolingian nobles supported the succession right of Charles of Lorraine, Ottair's brother. To reassure the Carolingians, Hugh had no better idea than to appoint Arnulf to the Archbishopric of Reims, who opened the city gates to Charles of Lorraine. The Count of Barcelona, Borrell II, also asked him for help in fighting the Muslims, and Hugh, who was being attacked from all sides, refused to accept it, and Borrell decided to suspend his bastionship on his own in 987. Another rebellious nobleman was Udai of Blois, who owned a castle in that county. He had little territory, but he came out with another enemy of the Capetians, Gerbert IV of Bermondui. Hugh, with the help of his loyal friend, Count Danu, Falconera, and the Duke of Normandy, Richard IO, managed to defeat him in 996, the same year he died. He was succeeded by Robert II the Pious, who, it turns out, had fallen in love with Ud's wife, Countess Bertha of Burgundy, during the war against him. His father, Hugh Capet, told him not to mess with her, but since he died, the boy married the girl, so
the dead man would go to the grave and the living man would go to the bun. Thanks to this, he obtained part of the county of Blois and also took control of part of the Danjou, breaking the traditional friendship with them. Now the alliances were completely reversed. To complicate matters, the girl was a half-cousin or something like that, and due to incest, the Papali excommunicated for a few years. They ended up divorced because Robert II could not get her pregnant and went for another, Constance of Arles, 17 years old, daughter of the Count of Provence William I, the Liberator, so named for having expelled the Arabs from the area. The girl was apparently charming, but snake-like, very vain and arrogant, but at least she gave the king children, and at that time that was the only important thing. Robert had some triumphs on a territorial level. Around the year 1000, Henry I of Burgundy, Hugh's uncle and brother, died. With the help of the Normans, Robert took control of cities such as Esser and Dillon and imposed his son Robert the Elder as Duke of the place. The year 1000 marks the middle of the Middle Ages. At that time, the Pope was Sylvester II, Gerbert of Ori, a Frankish religious man who loved science. He introduced Arabic and tried to have Indo-Arabic numerals adopted in Europe, although it would take some time. He popularized the astrolabe and the pendulum, created hydraulic machines, and even planned the construction of a steam organ for the Cathedral of Reims. There was a boom in religiosity during this period. Apparently, it had been almost a millennium since Jesus Christ had died, and millenarian movements emerged linked to the final judgment and concern about a possible apocalypse or return of Christ to judge the souls of all. That's why it's important to talk about the Orleans heresy of 102. The new millennium brought about the spread of the idea of a corrupt society with a rich, powerful, and corrupt church, something that had nothing to do with what Jesus Christ preached. Many ordinary people, peasants like Trade Diverti, among others, decided to rebel against ecclesiastical power, sacraments such as baptism or marriage, and they began to break religious icons. It's also true that most people didn't know what year they were living in, so it seems that rather than mass hysteria, there were only a few cases. There were some public fights with bishops, but of course, since they were more educated, had more of a smooth talk, and won over most people. And these rebels were accused of heresy, and King Robert II ordered a few of them burned.
I feel a little tight in the ass.
His sons Hugh, Henry I, and Robert the Elder rebelled against him, causing a civil war. The king died in the middle of the conflict in 1031 and was succeeded by Henry I, who would rule for 30 years. The civil war was over, but Henry decided to get involved in another one, because life is very boring otherwise. He fought against the growing power of Duke William of Normandy, and after signing a peace with the guy around 1066, he managed to conquer the Kingdom of England. But that's another story. Oh, and some of the Normans began to make inroads into the Mediterranean and conquered Sicily and southern Italy. Philip I was born from Henry I's marriage to Princess Anne of Kiev, who ruled for almost half a century. It's assumed that when a king rules for many years, it's because he was the master, but not here. This was a period of total Capetian decline, as the feudal lords had much more power. Towards the end of his reign, the first crusade to recover the Holy Land would take place. Were they successful or was it a complete failure? We'll find out in the next episode. Remember that you can immerse yourself in more history with my book Imperios y Espadazos, with all the most extensive information, more civilizations, more battles, more anecdotes, hundreds of curiosities and told in small chapters arranged in chronological order. Thanks to everyone who shares the videos, and also thanks to the Patreons who support this mega project of summarizing the entire history of humanity from beginning to end. See you in the next video.